Welcome to Defining Roles, a podcast about jobs you may have never heard of. I'm your host, Kate Barrett. Let's explore the possibilities of what's out there so that we can find our perfect role. Hello. Welcome to episode 25 of Defining Roles, kind of a fun number this week. And I'm talking to Brooks Ford, who is a performance dietitian. And what makes Brooks so interesting to me is how she has created a unique pairing in her career by taking nutrition and pairing it with the military. She was able to find an area of interest that she's had since she was, you know, in her early teens, and use that interest to support a community that she appreciates and admire. And it's so cool to hear about her experience. And in this episode, Brooks shares things that we can incorporate into our lives and our diets and ways of seeing food that are really helpful. I went through some specific situations of what we can eat and when for better sleep, ways that we can support our immunity, especially now, and how to make gradual adjustments so that these changes that she incorporates or advises that we incorporate are sustainable. Last episode, I mentioned that I would have some exciting news to share, but that has changed a little bit. So anyone that's been anxiously awaiting that update can relax and just enjoy the interview today. I personally loved this conversation and took away several useful tips. So I hope you enjoy this one as well. Over to Brooks Ford. Brooks, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast.
Yes, thank you, Kate, for having me. It is such a pleasure to be here.
Let's start with the first question. What's your official job title?
So my job title has changed over the years, but as a whole, I would consider myself a performance dietitian. And what that is essentially I focus on food for performance.
Very cool. How would you define your role?
So as a performance dietitian, you know, first of all, I am a registered dietitian or an RD. And so what a performance dietitian does essentially, like I mentioned, you know, just a minute ago, is we focus on food for performance. So when a lot of people think of nutrition or a dietitian, they would think, oh, you tell me what to eat so I lose weight, or, you know, if I need to manage my cholesterol or blood sugar. But as a performance dietitian, yes, we focus on, you know, those, you know, secondary issues like, you know, weight management, you know, managing, you know, different health markers. But essentially, our main goal is to focus on your performance to help you perform your best, both physically and mentally. So that could be for an athlete trying to perform his or her sport. It could be for someone even that maybe has a job that requires a lot of, you know, high cognitive function. So both, again, physically and mentally, you know, what do you need to eat to perform your best?
That's so cool. And you have a really cool, unique pairing. So you have taken your role as the performance dietitian and you've paired it with the military. Would you tell us a little bit about how you made that connection or how your role has kind of evolved a little bit?
Sure. So first of all, I've always had an interest in nutrition. I have wanted to be a dietitian since I was 16. And so this has been something that I've been doing for, or I've been interested in for decades. And I've also had a tie to the military. My dad was in the military. My brother was in the military. My husband's in the military, you know, still currently. I was in the military for a little bit. And so when I was in school, I was just finishing up grad school. You know I was about to, you know, get all of my credentials to be a registered dietitian. And I just didn't want to follow the traditional career path of most dietitians. You know, you go work in a hospital, you know, outpatient clinic. I just felt like I was called to do something more. And I've always, you know, been so fond of the military and have wanted to support in some way. And I don't know, one day just this idea popped into my head, you know, I wonder if the military needs dietitians. You know, not even thinking that I would join. And, you know, I ended up joining the military. I was an army dietitian for a couple of years. And, you know, after I got out, I've been able to stay closely tied to the military. And, you know, currently now, I work for the Henry M. Jackson Foundation, and they focus a lot on total force fitness. So, you know, optimizing, you know, health to perform your military duties. And so it's been really unique to, you know, make that connection over the years, you know, with nutrition for tactical performance. And, you know, with my current role, I am a contractor, so I probably should say, you know, full disclosure, everything that I'm talking about today are, you know, my views and don't represent, you know, the Department of Defense. But, you know, I've worked, you know, with soldiers, I've worked with cadets at the Air Force Academy, special operations. And so it's been really neat to see that evolution of how nutrition can play a role in certain in the performance of our service members.
That's so great that they have that connection and the importance of, you know, whether it's mental health or injury recovery, and then the high performance that you're mentioning, that all of that can be connected into nutrition and the food that we're eating and supplying, you know, all of the people in these different roles. So how do you determine what people need? Do you look at macronutrients, micronutrients, calories? I know there's a lot of different measurement systems that people talk about once you enter that nutritional realm.
Yes, and it can be so confusing when you're trying to put it all together. So the first thing that I do when, you know, currently now I don't counsel one-on-one, but when I do sit down, or when I did sit down with, you know, someone one-on-one, and I'm trying to determine, you know, what do you need to be eating? There's a lot of different factors that I take into consideration. And so I usually will do this full assessment to get to know the individual a lot better. You know, what's been your diet history? What's your health history? How active are you? And so what I would do from there is, after I've gathered all of that information, and not only just, you know, physical findings, but also, you know, what's your attitude towards food? How much are you sleeping? All those other factors that come into play when it comes to our overall health. And then what I would do is, based on how they're eating at the time, I usually try and get, you know, a couple days worth of a food intake from them, and it would really depend on the person. You know, a lot of people just want this straight meal plan where, hey, tell me how many calories I need to eat, spell it all out for me. That's what I want. And I personally don't really like to do that. But if that's what somebody needs, I'll do it for them. However, what I like to focus on is, okay, here's how you're eating now. Here are places that I see gaps in your nutrition. And so ultimately, I do calculate calorie needs for most of the people that I work with, but I don't necessarily give them that number. Or I might just say, hey, you need, you know, 2,500 calories a day. But rather, what I want them to focus on are, what are the types of foods that they're choosing, and how are they eating them throughout the day? Mm-hmm. So not only just because, you know, a calorie, yes, it's important to be aware of how many calories you're consuming, but they're not everything. They don't always capture your overall nutrition. I like to look at things like macro and micronutrients. Are you getting enough protein throughout the day? How are you eating your protein throughout the day? Is it all in the evening when you eat that, you know, five pieces of steak after, you know, skipping meals all day? Or are you getting small doses of protein throughout the day? Okay, say you're exercising, you know, are you getting a steady dose of carbohydrates before and after you work out? You know, what does your micronutrient intake look like? Are you getting enough vitamins and minerals? Could you be lacking? And, you know, what are ways that we can incorporate more of those foods? Say, you know, for example, vitamin D is getting a lot of attention, and a lot of people don't get enough vitamin D through food. And if you live in a cold climate and are covered up all the time, or it's overcast skies, you're probably not getting daily sunlight to get your vitamin D. So what are some ways that we can incorporate, you know, more vitamin D in your overall nutrition plan? And there's a lot of people where, I mean, they could overhaul so many things in their eating patterns. So I don't like to overwhelm them. I just like to focus on, okay, let's come up with, you know, some kind of game plan for, let's start increasing these nutrients, maybe cut back a little bit on this, but slowly, you know, over time, working toward a better overall well-balanced eating pattern. So there's a lot that goes into, you know, what determines what someone might need. You know, like I said, it could be everything from, you know, how much are you exercising? You know, I mean, the basic things are you male, female? You know, what's your body size? How old are you? Have you, you know, been training a lot, you know, recently? Are you a well-trained athlete, or are you just starting a workout regimen? So there, again, there's a lot of different factors that come into play. And so really trying to tailor an eating pattern that best fits that person where they are. Hopefully that answers that question.
It does, but it's basically, it depends. It depends on who you are, what you're doing, and where you are in your journey. And then also what's sustainable. I think that also comes in as, like, if you throw a bunch of stuff at people, they're not as likely to stick, versus if they're, you know, small tweaks here and there. If you learn how to make better choices, then you can make lots of little choices that have big impact rather than trying to implement 10 new things.
Yes, you are absolutely right. Sustainability is so important because, hey, anybody can do a diet for a week, but can you do it for a lifetime? And if you can't, if you don't want to eat that way for the rest of your life, then it's not worth it.
Yeah. Are there situations when it is very situational? Like for nutrition plans that you've put together, if there is a special operations team, there's certain, like, short term for dealing with a high stress environment or dealing with certain elements?
I would say yes, particularly when access to food becomes an issue, or, you know, if someone is going to be, you know, in the case of the military, if you've got someone that's in an extreme environment, you know, we don't focus so much on, like, okay, well, you're not getting all your fresh fruits and vegetables that you need, but when you're in a deployed environment, you know, in an austere location, access to food can become a big issue. And so really it comes down to, hey, can we at least get you enough calories so that you're not losing a lot of weight and a lot of muscle mass so drastically that your performance is affected? And then when we're able to get you back in an environment where, you know, good, solid, nutritious foods are available, then we can focus on nutrition. So in that case, yes, depending on the situation, we do, you know, we certainly can be flexible when it comes to, you know, the immediate need for someone to follow, you know, a specific diet. And you could also say the same for, say, someone with like irritable bowel syndrome, or for someone that's got all these digestive issues. There's, you know, a diet out there called the low FODMAP diet. And essentially FODMAP it's an acronym, but you're limiting certain types of carbohydrates that can be hard to digest, but it's not a long-term sustainable solution. It just helps you manage your symptoms in the short term so that you can better identify, well, what might be your trigger foods so that you can know to maybe limit certain types of foods long term, but not have to give them up completely altogether.
I love that. I know you said that you don't have, like, a one size fits all, but I was curious if you're still up for a lightning round of questions and certain topics that maybe would be a starting point, and then people can adapt based on where they are.
Most definitely.
Okay. So first one on my questions. What would be some food for mental performance?
Great question. I would say focus on foods that keep you full, and give you a steady dose of energy, or give your brain a steady dose of energy, as well as good healthy fats. So some good examples of these might be things like nuts and seeds, fatty fish like salmon, tuna, sardines, I'm a big fan also of, you know, going back to nuts and seeds, chia seeds, walnuts. They're also a good source of good, healthy omega-3 fats, which actually your brain needs lots of good, healthy fats. You could also do things like avocado, olive oil. I also like good, complex, high-fiber carbohydrates. And so these would be things like, say, sweet potatoes, beans, lentils, lots of good vegetables, fruits. These would be some great foods to help optimize mental performance.
Awesome. What about physical endurance?
Ooh, I would say not only carbohydrates are going to be the key there for physical performance, but not like people are probably thinking like, oh, let me go carb load, a 5K run. Not quite like that. I would say, quick carbohydrates, small amount of quick carbohydrates before a workout. After you work out, have some more carbohydrates. Don't have to do a ton, but just get some to replenish those lost fuel stores or those fuel stores that you burned up, along with a little bit of protein around your workouts. And then you want to make sure that you're eating a balance of nutrients every couple of hours after your workouts to really optimize recovery. And similar to foods for mental performance, some of my favorite foods to help with recovery from exercise are going to be anti-inflammatory foods. So those omega-3 fats again, lots of good fruits and vegetables, especially the darker colored fruits and veggies. So things like your dark green leafy vegetables, berries, cherries. I also really like citrus. Lots of good nutrients there that can help with recovery from workouts.
Awesome. What about better sleep?
Ooh, what I usually tell people is, if you're looking to sleep better, have a small snack before you go to bed that's mostly carbohydrates, good quality carbohydrates. So maybe like a piece of fruit, like a banana. Also, a little bit of protein can help. Maybe something like, some Greek yogurt. Just something small, like a small snack before you go to bed. Another food that I'm a fan of, and this is gaining a lot of popularity in the athletic community, is tart cherry juice. And tart cherry juice, yeah, you don't need a lot. It's maybe, 6 to 8 ounces before you go to bed. And tart cherry juice has actually been studied a lot with exercise performance and helping recovery because it's really high in these phytochemicals that help with repair and, they're anti-inflammatory and can help with the recovery process. But tart cherry juice is also a natural source of melatonin. And so it can, what they find in the research is it actually can help you fall asleep a little bit easier. Some other fun foods for sleep, I mentioned the banana. There's actually been some studies, believe it or not a lot of research, but kiwi, having 2 kiwi before you go to bed can help with sleep. And again, it's a good source of, some good quality carbohydrates. I would definitely suggest limit alcohol and caffeine. They're not going to help you sleep. A lot of times if you eat a really heavy meal that's high in a lot of your lot of fat, like a really greasy meal, for example, it's going to take a long time to digest. And a lot of times that indigestion can keep you awake. So not eating a big meal at least 3 hours before you go to bed, just having that small snack and then maybe focusing on something like tart cherry juice, banana, some kiwi can certainly be helpful too.
Awesome. I haven't heard of the tart cherry, so I definitely am not in the loop when it comes to the fitness community or any of the nutrition information that's going on. I'll have to look into that one.
Oh yeah. As well as the kiwi.
Oh, good. And I haven't heard of the kiwi before bed trick either. That one sounds fun. Kiwis are good.
They are good. Yeah, I agree. Especially when you can get like the big juicy ones when they're in season. Yeah. And like I said, there's not a ton of research to support this, but it's certainly not going to hurt you. And kiwi is so high in a lot of good nutrients like vitamin C, for example. And so I'm willing to give it a shot to improve my sleep.
So on the topic of eating before going to bed, I've heard before that it's not great to eat right before you go to bed, but it sounds like it's just don't eat a heavy meal or anything big, and it's okay to have something in your stomach while you sleep.
Absolutely. You know, your body's constantly burning calories and burning up fuel. Even when you're sleeping, your brain is actually really active when you're sleeping. And I think a lot of people think that if they eat past a certain time at night, their metabolism is just going to turn off, and anything that they eat past, say, 8 p.m. is just going to go straight to fat. Well, that's not necessarily the case. If you look at how most people eat in our culture, we tend to eat a lot later in the day. And so I think that's where a lot of the misconceptions surrounding, you know, eating right before bed come from, is that we're just eating too much later on at night. And so that would, again, you wrapped it up perfectly. You know, my suggestion is just don't eat something super heavy before you go to bed. And it's totally okay to have a small snack. In fact, especially for athletes, we recommend that because it gives them one last top off on a fuel source, so that while their body is repairing and recovering overnight, they have ample fuel available. But yeah, if you go to bed on a super heavy meal, I mean, you're just probably not going to sleep as well because all that food's just sitting there digesting. But don't worry, yeah, you're still burning calories, and especially your brain is needing that fuel overnight.
Cool. I've noticed that during this period where we're at home all the time, I've been eating more for lunch, or kind of that midday meal, and it's been easier to sleep at night just having like a lighter dinner. So that has kind of worked out just based on our schedule. Are there any things that we can adjust in our eating or should be thinking about spending more time at home?
Yes. Especially with this pandemic and people working from home, it's been so interesting to see what, or I should say how, people's habits are changing. You know, first of all, I think it's a great opportunity. You know, make more food at home. You can cook more at home. A lot of times when you're cooking at home, you tend to eat a little bit better, more nutritious foods. You can get the whole family involved. I would say, kind of like what you've been doing, is, you know, eating more earlier on in the day. I think where a lot of people are running into trouble right now is they're constantly home. You can only be on Zoom and all of these virtual platforms for so long before you're just burnt out. But what else do you go do? Okay, you took the dog for a walk. You know, you cleaned up a little bit. But what's left to do but eat? It's a great way to kill the boredom. And hey, the fridge is right there next to your, you know, makeshift kitchen table office. You can literally see the food, you know, from your computer. And so I think that's led to a lot of people are just going in and they're snacking a lot, or they're eating because they're bored and not necessarily because they're hungry. And so, you know, again, a lot of great things have come from, you know, being at home where people are cooking more. I've also, you know, talked to people who say that they can finally eat on their body's schedule versus having to eat at a certain time because they have to be at the office by a certain hour. But now that they're working at home, they can have that later breakfast that they would prefer rather than eating super early in the morning when they're just not that hungry. I would say, though, if you are one of those that's tempted, you know, if you're a boredom eater, or, you know, you're stressed out because, you know, you got your whole family there and you just need room to breathe, and so you're going for the ice cream and cookies instead of the fruit for a snack because, you know, you need that comfort food, is keep it out of sight. You know, for all the food that's in plain sight, you know, whether it's in, you know, out on the counter, front of the fridge, front of the pantry, make those the nutrient dense choices. And if you've got maybe the treats, keep them in the back so you're not constantly tempted by them. And listen to your body, you know, ask yourself, what is it that I really need? Do I really need something to eat? Or is it, I just need a breather? Do I need to just step outside for a minute and take a breath of fresh air? Do I need to call somebody to just kind of get my mind straight? Do I need to go for a walk? You know, it may not be the food that you really need to satisfy you. And so that's what I often suggest for people if they're one of those that's, you know, like, oh, I got the munchies, but I'm not really that hungry. You know, what else can you substitute eating with? Because, you know, you'll hear of people saying, well, I've gained the COVID-19 or the COVID-15. But then other people are like, man, I'm just super healthy. I've been working out so much, you know, cooking more at home. So it could go either way. Yeah. But it's been really interesting to see how nutrition habits have changed, and how some people might need to focus more on, okay, maybe we do need to cut back on all of the mindless snacking. So it's, yeah, it's been an interesting year for food intake for sure.
Definitely. I love the trick of putting your sweet treats, you kind of tuck them back. You still know they're there and you're still going to eat them, but it's like seeing other options and making that like extra decision before it's just the first thing that you grab.
Right. So if you know that the chocolate bar is in the back of the pantry or wherever you keep the chocolate, we like to keep ours and sometimes in the freezer, like that nice cold chocolate. If you see the fruit there on the counter, have the fruit first, see if that satisfies you. And if not, like, okay, then if your that chocolate is still on your mind, okay, go ahead. Maybe have a glass of water too, before you go for the chocolate. Yeah, I mean, you totally know it's still there. And I'm so guilty of this. I'm human too. Nobody's gonna eat perfect. I don't expect people to eat perfect. However, those are some tricks that I have found that actually work for me. And I never want to let myself get too hungry. That would be another recommendation that I have is because when you're hungry, willpower just goes out the window, and food that might not normally tempt you all of a sudden just sounds delicious. So if you've got a big bowl of candy out on your table and you're starving, that bowl of candy is not going to last very long.
On the topic of kind of, nutritional habits right now, would you tell us a little bit about some of your favorites for boosting immunity? I know I've been eating really healthy the last several months because I can't control the outside factors in life right now, but I can sure control my body's preparedness to deal with them. And so I've really been looking at my eating habits and making sure that I'm at my best to just kind of handle whatever comes its way. What are your best things that you recommend for boosting immunity?
Yes, well, that first of all, that's so great that you're focusing on your own intake. That's something that you can control when you can't control so many of these external factors. But what we eat can have a huge impact on how our immune system functions. And what's really interesting with this pandemic, we find that people that are, that are low in vitamin D tend to have worse outcomes than those that have adequate vitamin D status. And usually you measure vitamin D with a simple blood test. So vitamin D, making sure you're getting enough vitamin D is one of the things that you can do to support, good, healthy, immune function. I'm not going to say that, these nutrients are going to boost immunity or, bring about a miracle, in curing a disease. By no means do I mean that. But they can certainly help your body do what it needs to do so that your immune function is optimal if you're trying to combat some kind of illness. So vitamin D is one. And vitamin D, again, it's the sunshine vitamin. You can get it by going outside, but a lot of us either aren't able to get outside, we're not able to actually make our own vitamin D from the sunlight as well as others. And unfortunately, vitamin D is not found in a lot of foods. You really only find it in dairy products, and really it's only milk because it's been fortified with vitamin D. So people are like, well, I eat a ton of yogurt and cheese, but really there's not much vitamin D there. Fatty fish, but how many of us are eating fatty fish regularly? And I'm not talking like, tilapia. I'm talking about like salmon and, tuna, sardines. Are we eating this, a couple times a week? And so most of us aren't, getting those fatty fish every day. Egg yolks are actually a good source of vitamin D too. But they're not as quite as high as something like dairy products. So you'd have to eat a ton of eggs to get enough vitamin D. And so a lot of people now are actually looking at supplementation. And I would suggest before you go, buy the supplements, they're certainly not going to be harmful. But get the simple blood test just to see where your vitamin D is, to see if you need to supplement. And if you can do it through food first, that would be my recommendation. Some other good foods for helping to support good immune function are omega-3 fats. So again, those omega-3 fatty acids from salmon, tuna. If you eat foods like chia seeds, flax seeds, walnuts, those are actually a good source of omega-3s as well. Making sure that you're getting enough fruits and vegetables. And this is a big one. Most of us don't consume enough. And the recommendation for fruits and vegetables is, you know, you'll hear, oh, you need, you know, 9 to 13 cups every day, but who's actually measuring that out? And right. So I think it's helpful just to say what I always start with, and this is just my recommendation, is try and have 3 different vegetables and 2 different fruits each day. Start there. And try and get in, you know, a good variety, lots of color. So some of my favorites are going to be like your dark leafy greens, like spinach is one of my favorites. I really like other vegetables like bell peppers, carrots, onions, mushrooms. I'm trying to think what else do I eat a lot of. Love things like broccoli, cauliflower with fruits, berries, cherries, pineapple, citrus, apples. Go with what's in season. Foods that are in season tend to pack the most nutrition. And don't be afraid of frozen and canned options either. Frozen foods are packed at their peak ripeness, and so you're maintaining all that nutritional value. Even canned foods, they're packed at their peak ripeness. I mean, they do undergo a little bit of processing. So, you know, if you aren't getting something that's super, super fresh, you know, straight from the field, frozen is just as good. And sometimes it's even better than fresh, just some of that produce that's been sitting in the grocery store for, you know, who knows how long. And so I would say, you know, the vitamin D, you know, plenty of fruits and vegetables, omega-3s, getting enough vitamin C. So if you're eating lots of fruits and vegetables, you're probably getting plenty of vitamin C. Getting enough protein is really important too. And particularly with COVID-19, it's affecting the elderly. Well, the elderly often have issues with trying to get in enough nutrition, particularly enough protein. And so it's not like you need to pound the protein, but look at how you're eating throughout the day. Are you getting a good source of protein at each of your meals, and focusing on good high quality proteins too? You know, so things like eggs, dairy products, all of your different types of meats. So whether that's, you know, beef, chicken, fish, wild game. If you're looking more for vegetarian options, beans, lentils, tofu, nuts and seeds have a little bit, not, you know, a ton, but focusing mainly on whole food sources of protein. You know, you could certainly pop the protein powders, but you get way more nutrition when you just eat whole foods. And so I think those are kind of the sort of the main foods and nutrients to focus on when building that healthy foundation to support good, healthy immune function.
Amazing. So much helpful information right there. I know recently a part of this like get healthy thing is I wasn't a big breakfast person, but I started eating oatmeal in the morning, and I put a little bit of maple syrup, chia seeds, shaved coconut, and blueberries. And that's like one of my favorite things that I eat every day. And so I'm glad to hear that checks a lot of the boxes that you're mentioning.
Yes, absolutely. That sounds like a delicious breakfast. I have oatmeal and chia with my breakfast every morning too. It's super filling and tasty.
It is. And I make, you know, I make a cup of oats. I make it on the stovetop, and it's usually enough that it lasts me, you know, 2 to 3 mornings. And so it's not like I have to do it every day, but I'm home. I can do it.
Yeah. So take advantage of that. That's exactly. Great.
Okay. Last question on this lightning round of specific examples. Hydration, plain water, electrolytes. What is the way to go to make sure that we are hydrated?
Yes. Good question. For the majority of us, stick with plain water. That is the best way to stay hydrated. If you are a heavy sweater, or you're a really salty sweater, and you can tell if you've got, like, you know, the salt stains down your face, like these white streaks on your face, or you can feel it on your skin, you see it on your t-shirt if you've been sweating a lot, especially if you live in a hot, humid climate and you're exercising heavily, then you might want to consider added electrolytes to your beverage. I usually say try and get electrolytes through food, and usually if you're eating regular meals and snacks throughout the day, you're getting plenty of electrolytes, especially if you're eating a, you know, wide variety of different foods. With added electrolytes, It's really only appropriate if you're exercising heavy in an extreme environment. Typically, we don't recommend, an electrolyte containing beverage unless you're working out, longer than an hour or so. We might recommend like a sports drink, or like if I'm doing a really long workout, I might throw in like a little electrolyte tablet with my water. But most of the time, plain water is going to work just fine, even for athletes. Now, if maybe say you are, battling some kind of, stomach upset, some GI issues, got diarrhea or something, then yeah, maybe, an electrolyte beverage might be appropriate if you're losing a lot of fluids and you're not able to eat, especially if you've got like a stomach bug, and you're not that hungry. Yeah, something that's got electrolytes in it can be useful as well. But a lot of these products out there that are touting all these extra electrolytes, a lot of times they're just looking to make a buck, and just drinking plain water is going to work for the majority of people most of the time.
Good. They successfully confused me. And so I'm glad that you're just saying stick to the water. It's good.
Yeah. And if you need to jazz it up, throw in a lemon or some cucumber. You can do the bubbly waters. They're like the fizzy waters, those are great. These don't have any added sugar in them. Yeah. So if the taste of plain water is too boring, there's plenty of ways to jazz it up.
The pineapple one. Have you tried the pineapple bubble water?
No, but now I really want to go try it because that sounds delicious.
It's so good, especially in the summer. I was going through a lot of those. Do they add anything? Do you know? Or is it?
Depends on the brand. Okay. Most of the time, no. It's just carbonated water with just some natural essence. I drink a lot of LaCroix. Coconut LaCroix has become my favorite. Yeah, nothing's added to that. Some of the waters, though, they will add. You just check the label. They'll either add, sugar, or if they don't, if it says, 0 grams of sugar, there might be an artificial sweetener that they use to add the flavor. It just depends on the brand. So that's okay. Where you have to pay attention to those food labels.
That just, it made me hesitate just a little bit of like, I don't know where the flavor is coming from. And, I'm aware of those things. I didn't know if you could count it as water or if it's, you count it as just like a drink. Okay.
Yeah, totally. It can count as your fluid intake for the day.
Awesome. Yeah. Try the pineapple one. It's recommended.
Oh, I'm going to now.
Not sponsored. It's not sponsored, but it's recommended. Brooks, where do you go for your information? There are so many sources out there. Where do you find the trusted information that you use?
Yes, that is such a good point. There's so much information out there. And I would also say that there's a lot of misinformation out there. I mean, you can Google anything, nutrition, weight loss, diet, and anybody will claim to be a nutrition expert. And so it's really hard to sift through what's legit and what's not. What I do is I go straight to the research. And part of my job as a registered dietitian is to help sift through all of this information that we're constantly bombarded with and to actually figure out what is credible. And so I actually utilize a lot of scientific resources such as, PubMed, where they will publish the actual nutrition research articles. There's also some organizations, government organizations out there that provide dietary guidance. So for example, like the dietary guidelines, for instance. Now, I know a lot of people are just angry at the government right now, or there's this great mistrust of the government, but I can tell you that their dietary recommendations, when you actually read into them and you look at the research that supports them, they're pretty well balanced. And so they can be a great place to go for, general recommendations. And when it comes to those individualized recommendations, however, utilizing, something like PubMed, or being part of organizations that are evidence-based. And so I'm a member of a couple nutrition organizations where they help dietitians and nutrition experts specifically sort through a lot of this research, and they share research articles, they share knowledge, they hold conferences every year to help dietitians stay up to date on the latest research and make sure that we're disseminating correct information to those that are, that are looking for better nutrition information and better nutrition plans. So,
awesome.
Go straight to the research. You know, Dr. Google will give you anything that you want to hear. So don't go to the bloggers, you know, go to a website that's typically a .org, or go get the research article itself.
Would you take us a little bit through your training and then your previous positions that you've had that kind of led to where you are today? And
sure. So as a registered dietitian, I have both a bachelor's and a master's in nutrition. My bachelor's is from Purdue, master's from Florida State. And then I also had to do a dietetic internship before I could actually sit for an exam to become a registered dietitian. And then from there, I actually worked for a year at the University of Alabama Hospital in Birmingham, Alabama, as just a clinical dietitian before I went into the Army. Was a dietitian for the Army for 3 years. I also worked at the Air Force Academy and was the cadet wing dietitian for all of the cadets. I worked with Air Force Special Operations at Hurlburt Field for about a year. And then currently I am with the Henry M. Jackson Foundation. I work for the Consortium for Health and Military Performance, or CHAMP, and I create educational material. So I've kind of done a lot of different types of jobs and worked with very different populations, but I've really come to enjoy working with the military population and focusing on tactical nutrition, just because the guidance that we provide our service members helps them to do their job. It's not like this is a sport that's in season. They have their off season. I mean, this is something that they do every single day. And so we're fueling them so that they can actually meet the demands of their jobs. And jobs in the military are very different. You think a lot of people have this idea that, okay, all these operators are deploying, you know, overseas, they're, you know, carrying heavy packs, you know, rucking, you know, a lot of physical exertion. And yes, that is the case for many of our service members, but you also have a lot that are very sedentary. But their job actually requires more cognitive capacity and has high, you know, mental demands, even though they're sitting at a desk. There are desk jockeys, as we often, or they often refer to themselves as that. And so really trying to tailor what is their job and what are the types of foods that they need to be eating, or what do they might need to cut back on. You know, you can imagine a lot of these positions in the military, especially when you're deployed, can be very stressful. You're not getting much sleep. So you see, you know, caffeine use is rampant. You know, the immediate eating environment is full of a lot of junk food. So like quick sugars, lots of caffeine, not a lot of fruits and vegetables, good quality proteins, and erratic eating schedules. I think people forget that it's not just what we eat, but it's how we're eating throughout the day. And so it's been really fun to, you know, in working with these different populations, to see, okay, what are the main issues? And now what I'm doing is creating educational materials for service members and healthcare providers to better educate our service members on what do you need to eat to be able to do your job and perform at your best. So it's been a really fun journey up to this point, and I've certainly enjoyed it and hope to stay with this community, at least while I'm, you know, in this career field.
Wow. What was there any training that you had to do when you were in the Army? Did they have some sort of like onboarding for your sector?
So with the Army, we had the basic officer leadership course when we first joined. And so it's essentially, it's not quite like a basic training, but it's sort of like an orientation to, one, the Army, but also, you know, sort of medical specific requirements, as well as additional training. So, and you even get to do things like, you know, field, you go out to the field, you know, you're shooting rifles. So that's definitely kind of fun. Not something that most dietitians would do on a daily basis.
Wow.
But also you are, familiarized with, you know, Army, at least for me, it was sort of Army, you know, Army medicine, how it works, how everything is, what's the organization, you know, the big Army organization like, how it's all structured, and what's your role within Army medicine. I wouldn't say that it was so much skill specific, because the Army a lot of times relies on, you know, these, you know, your credentials, whether you're a registered dietitian, a physical therapist, a medical doctor. You get that training from, you know, other universities. You know, sometimes the Army will pay for it and they have their own programs and, you know, internships that you can go through. But for someone like me, I had all of my training. And so this, you know, basic officer, you know, leadership course was just, you know, 2 months, and it was more just familiarization with the Army and where I would fit in the big Army organization.
Wow. Because that is its own culture. They have their own way of doing things. And that has to be, I mean, it takes time to kind of get to know the system and that frame of mind. Are there dietitians that go to different bases, or are you stationed pretty much, you know, in the U.S.?
They're all over the world. And so you have both active duty dietitians that, you know, are stationed, you know, pretty much, at least with the Army, almost every installation. Some have several dietitians, you know, at their installations. And a lot of the other branches have dietitians as well. There's also civilian dietitians, and they're permanent. I mean, they pretty much stay put, whereas the active duty dietitians will move around like any military service member would. But yes, most often they're scattered all over the world. I mean, I know dietitians, you know, definitely here in the US, but also in Europe and Asia, all over, which is pretty unique. I mean, that's a pretty cool opportunity for a dietitian that wants to travel.
Wow. What are the day-to-day things that you are doing in your role now, as well as these other roles? I think when you hear dietitian, sometimes you don't have like a clear list of what you would imagine that person doing.
Yeah. So right now what I do is I scrub research and write content for military service members and healthcare providers that we make available to them. And so a lot of it is just, you know, reading, researching, and writing, which is very different from what I've done in the past. I still hold all of my credentials as a provider, even though I'm not actually practicing in counseling anymore. But what I used to do was, you know, I would spend a lot of time sitting down one-on-one with people and helping them come up with nutrition plans and monitoring their progress toward their nutrition goals. And so a lot of my time was spent counseling. I would also give presentations on different nutrition topics, depending on, you know, what the need was, whether it was working with Air Force Special Operations and they wanted a presentation on, I think I gave one on healthy holiday eating. And then, you know, when I was at the Air Force Academy, I gave a talk on meal prepping and planning. I've given lots of sports nutrition talks. I remember talking to the marathon team at the Air Force Academy and, you know, how to fuel for running. So lots of different topics. So presenting, and that's something that I still do in my current role, obviously in a virtual setting, you know, with COVID, but lots of presenting. Certainly the counseling one-on-one in the past. And then just providing input on different initiatives that might be going on, serving as the subject matter expert if someone had nutrition questions. So, you know, they would come to me and like, what are your thoughts on this? We want to try and implement this within our, you know, specific unit. So acting as a consultant. So it's definitely not a job that gets boring. There's always something going on. And, you know, even at the Air Force Academy, I had a heavy food service role. So I had a, you know, food service responsibility as well, you know, writing the menu, programming all the food. When you're trying to feed 4,000 cadets at one time, how do you find one meal that meets all their needs? And how much do you order? How much do you need to make? How much are they going to eat? So you're doing a lot of math. Yeah. So it's definitely there's been a lot of different types of things that I've done, but it's all been really enjoyable. It's been fun not to just do one thing, you know, for several years on end. It definitely stays fresh for sure.
Wow. There's so much that you mentioned within there already, but what are some of the hard versus soft skills that you've developed? So hard skills are the technical training and the formal education. We've mentioned a lot of that. And the soft skills are things that you've developed or that you're naturally good at.
Ooh, that is a really good question. I mean, first of all, to become a dietitian, you have to meet all of, you know, you've got to have the educational background. You've got to have the internship. You've got to sit down and take a test. You've got to be good at math. You need to be good at working with people. So you got to have some, you know, social skills there. I mean, I would say those are probably the hard skills that you need. For my role specifically, I think it really, you know, not just my current role, but in my roles in the past, I think that public speaking is an important skill to have. Also being able to technical writing, is very helpful as well. And some of those soft skills, I would say you have to, especially when you're dealing with people one-on-one, you have to be open-minded, empathetic. People are coming to you from very different situations and you have to meet them where they're at. And I think there's this, assumption that, oh, if you go in to see a dietitian, they're just going to give you this one size fits all meal plan, you know, and like that everybody's the same. But, you know, because people come from such different backgrounds and they have such different relationships with food, you have to be open to their experience and being willing to meet them where they are at the current time. They may not be ready to make any changes. They might be just struggling to, you know, remember, you know, to eat breakfast, or you've got someone that's, you know, much further advanced and is like, well, I need to have the absolute perfect diet. So I think being flexible, and really being a good listener, when you're working with people, and understanding your audience and what is it that they really need. And I don't think a lot of times in school, you're taught a lot of those soft skills. And so I think it's really important that you have the right personality for that. And then I also think as a dietitian, and, you know, some dietitians may not agree with me, but I think it's important that we need to set a good example. And I'm not saying that dietitians, we certainly don't eat perfect. I mean, you're very likely, you know, if we weren't in the middle of the pandemic, you might find me at a bar eating a pizza and drinking a beer. Let's be honest. But if you saw me doing that every single day, or, you know, eating a ton of fast food, you know, not taking pride in, you know, wanting to eat healthy, I'm probably going to lose a lot of credibility. And so I think it's important for dietitians to model not only good behavior, but realistic behavior, because we're not all perfect and we're not expecting people to be when it comes to their eating habits. And so helping people realize that, hey, healthy eating doesn't have to be super complicated or expensive or super challenging. You know, I mean, I would say we eat pretty healthy and we do a lot of home cooked meals, but we like easy stuff. And so modeling that, you know, hey, look at all these good healthy meals that we make that are super easy, but hey, we're also going to be the ones that are going to be, you know, having a beer and pizza and ice cream and all the treats as well. It's all about, you know, that finding that right balance that still supports a healthy lifestyle. And so, yeah, again, I would say certainly modeling that good behavior too is important.
There's so much good stuff in there that I love that you mentioned, especially the listening to see where people are and what is important to them. Why are they sitting down in front of you and what are they working on so that you can give them the information that's important to them and, you know, tips that they'll actually implement and use. Like we talked about earlier, it's what's practical and what's going to be sustained over the long run, not just, you know, the diet that they're going to do for a week and then just, you know, throw in the towel because it's not realistic.
Exactly. That is so true. You've got to find what works for you long term.
Yeah. I totally relate to your balance in all things. I would consider myself to be an intuitive eater in the sense that, like, if I want to eat pizza, I will. And then also just knowing that when you listen, like actually listen to what you're craving, it's not going to tell you to only eat ice cream and pizza. Like, maybe for a couple of days, and then your body will be like, would you please give me some vegetables? Or like, would you please like just not? And I think that to me is like, I don't deprive myself, or I don't believe in like complete elimination, because then you just kind of like fixate and crave it more rather than scratching that itch when it first comes. And then you just, you know, move on and get back to the other things.
Right. You hit the nail on the head. You need to honor what your body needs. And if your body truly needs the pizza or the chocolate, yeah, you can have it. Allow yourself that permission. But what you'll realize is that you keep doing that over time, your body doesn't necessarily need that. And so really tuning into what those internal cues are telling you is so important. And we're so used to overriding them in so many ways throughout our lives. We eat because it's a certain time of day or because a certain food is available, and not because it's what we really need at that moment. And so, like you, I'm a huge fan of intuitive eating. And that's why I don't like people to focus so much on calories or macros or, you know, counting servings of foods, but really trying to tune into what are those good nourishing foods that your body really needs, and honoring what your body is telling you. You know, eat when you're hungry and then stop when you're full. And that is hard to do, especially in our society today. But the more that we can get back to those intuitive eating practices, I think we'll be much better off, and we're not going to get so wrapped up in this diet culture, and we find an eating pattern that is much more sustainable over the long haul and healthier over the long haul than, you know, a lot of these crazy, you know, like fat and crash diets that a lot of people jump on.
Yeah. When you're sitting down with a coaching session, where do you tell people to start? What actually makes a difference?
Well, first of all, I like to see where people are at and if they're open to making changes. I always start with, okay, pick one thing to change. Don't pick 10. Don't even, sometimes two is too much. Just pick one and start by adding in something rather than taking something away. So if you've got someone that's just not eating well overall, or a lot of fast food, or they're eating a really erratic eating pattern, okay, start by, can you maybe have like one small food for breakfast if you're skipping meals? Okay, you're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. Can we start by adding in one piece of fruit every day? Start by adding in the good stuff rather than, okay, you eat too much fast food, you need to cut back. I'd rather people focus on what are the good things that they can increase rather than deprive them, feeling like they're depriving themselves. And I think that gives it a much more, I think that gives a much more positive spin on changing your eating habits. You know, I think the word diet is a four-letter word. I just equate it with deprivation and sadness and, you know, disappointment. And it shouldn't be that way. And so when we focus on cut this back, cut this out, all you're going to want, like we said before, you cut something out or try and go, you know, give up the ice cream cold turkey, you're just going to crave it. And so when you do finally give in, oh, it's going to be an all-out binge. So you never want to just, you know, cut something out completely unless your willpower is truly that strong. And there have been people that, you know, can do it and they've been successful. Awesome. But start by adding in and go slow. And you're not going to be perfect all the time. And you're going to have setbacks. But accept that. And just get over the next hump. Every day is a new day. You know, you can start over again, and that's totally fine. You know, we're not looking for perfection here. We're looking for progress. And so one of the first things that I always suggest for most people, you know, the two main, probably the two of the most common recommendations that I have given in the past are, one, focus on trying to get in more fruits and vegetables. And then secondly, hydrate. Make sure you're hydrating throughout the day. Just those two simple additions, by focusing on those things, which involve drinking more water, eating more fruits and vegetables, even if it's just one glass of water, you know, one piece of fruit, that's something. I think that's much more manageable and it's a much more sustainable change. And then what you can do is you build your self-efficacy. I mean, that's one of my favorite words, is you build on your previous successes. Okay, you mastered the glass of water. Okay, let's add in that piece of fruit now. You mastered that. Hey, maybe add an extra vegetable. Okay, maybe we switch to 100% whole grain bread instead of the Wonder Bread. Little changes that you keep making over time that end up leading you down that path of a healthier, much healthier lifestyle and a healthier eating pattern. I think that's what really makes the biggest difference overall, are just those teeny tiny little steps that you make over time. Don't expect the change overnight, but I think that has the biggest impact on someone's health and their nutrition.
Brooks, I love that so much. I've never heard a dietitian or anyone in nutrition make it that simple and make it about adding things. Stop punishing yourself with a diet and feeling bad about eating something when it's as simple as adding an apple, drinking a glass of water. And I like that it's a compound effect, and like that one thing, you feel that win, because everybody likes to feel a sense of accomplishment instead of, oh man, I had a glass of wine, I failed this week. It's like, no, make it about the positive associations, because then you feel the success compound and you want to add even more of that, because that's what makes it feel good.
Exactly. And especially if you're someone that has checklists, you know, if you've got that checklist that you can make that check mark and you see it every single day and you see that progress.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a win. It boosts your self-esteem. It boosts your confidence. Like, yeah, I can do this. That wasn't that hard. But yeah, it's just those little things. It makes all the difference. And I wish that I wish people would be more accepting of that we don't need to just completely overhaul our eating habits, you know, in order to be healthy. Because if you end up spiraling, going on this downward spiral because you crash dieted, you know, you're often in a worse place than you were when you started.
Man, so good. Okay, final question for you. What is the best piece of career advice you have either received or would offer to others?
Oh my goodness. You know, that is something I wouldn't say I've had a lot of strong mentors in my career field. I've worked with some phenomenal dietitians that I've looked up to, but I don't feel like I've been in a position where I've, you know, been given a lot of good advice that I found really helpful. I've sort of kind of had to figure it out on my own. And what I've learned from that is that, you know, one, your career path is definitely not going to follow this ideal path that you set out for yourself. You know, you go to college and you think, oh, I'm going to do this for a job. That trajectory can change so easily. It can literally change overnight, for good or for better or for worse. And so what I have found is that have a plan, but don't feel like you need to follow that plan to a T. Be flexible. And good things take time and they take hard work. And I think there's this expectation that, you know, if you want something, you know, just, you know, go to school, get the degree, get the certification, and boom, you're in your dream job. You're going to have it. No, I wish it was that easy, but it's not. You just have to give it time. And during that time, as you're working towards, you know, this goal that you have in mind, you know, you're going to take a lot of different turns. There's going to be forks in the road, but you're also going to meet people that might change your thinking. And so that's been something that I have found to be, I think, a great benefit to the career path that I've taken. I mean, if you would ask me when I started college, would I ever join the military? I would have told you, oh, heck no, I'm not cut out for that. That is not for me. But look at what happened. I was so eager to join the military. And, you know, I've stayed with this population and love it. Absolutely love it. Along the way, you know, I've just been open to ideas and opportunities that I wouldn't even imagine. And it's funny, I was telling my husband this the other day. I said that I feel like most of the jobs that I've had, they have literally just fallen into my lap. Like they opened up overnight and it was something like, oh, this job posting showed up that I never would have suspected. Or somebody reached out to me like, hey, are you interested in this position? This just opened up. Whereas, you know, I would spend so much time sometimes hunting for jobs or, you know, trying to figure out what I want to do with my career and just didn't feel like there was anything out there that was the right fit. And so it was just, you know, you never know what's going to happen the next day, but just be open and be patient. I think is helpful advice, especially when I see a lot of really young dietitians that, you know, like, oh, well, I want to be, you know, this type of dietitian, or I want to work with this population. You know, but you have to put in a lot of hours and a lot of, you know, hard work to get to where, you know, you ultimately want to be, in that dream job. And you have to also realize that you're probably never going to be satisfied. There's always going to be something better, something higher, you know, you're probably moving forward. And so just being open to those possibilities, maintain those relationships with people. I think networking is just so, so, so important. And just, you know, every day showing up, is progress, you know, especially if you're not happy in the position that you're in. You know, I've been really lucky. I've really enjoyed most of the jobs that I've had. I mean, no job is perfect, but you know, every day you're showing up, you're moving forward. And I think that's really important as you progress throughout your career and just, you know, be open to, hey, it's totally okay to try something new too.
Amazing. So good. And I love the, you know, it's hard to get patient, especially, you know, if you're looking for something new or those opportunities, but reminding yourself, like, take the actions that you can where you're at. And then a lot of it's just timing. Either that job wasn't available and ready for you yet, or, you know, another piece had to click into place. But, you know, it's timing is a funny thing.
It really is. I mean, I know the saying, it's just, you know, sometimes this saying might sound like nails on a chalkboard, but everything happens for a reason. But I truly do believe that you're going to end up where you're meant to be in your career. Well, and in life too. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think it's just really important to be open to that and be flexible. So yeah, that's what I would offer. That would be my offering to the world as far as career advice goes.
Love it. So much. Brooks, thank you for your time today and sharing your wisdom and your learnings about nutrition. And I feel good about some things that I've been doing. And I also have a few things that I'd love to add to my current nutrition, you know, strategy, especially 2 kiwis before bed. I'm curious to see if that works. A little experimenting to do.
If that helps with sleep. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kate, it was such a pleasure. You know, thank you so much for having me on. It's always fun to talk about, you know, what I do. And so, yeah, seriously, this was wonderful. So I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. I think sometimes what I do is sometimes I do it every day. So I'm like, oh, this isn't that interesting, but it's super fun to share when others do find it really interesting.
Another big thank you to Brooks for joining us on this interview and sharing so many tips and tricks that we can incorporate into our nutrition strategy. I love Brooks' philosophy on what can we add. It's not about deprivation and taking things away. It's about incorporating more of the good stuff and ways to start small. And it's not about perfection. It's about supporting your body to show up as the best version of you. And sometimes that means choosing the fries over the salad. And that, to me, is a little more fun than shooting for perfection and beating yourself up if it doesn't look perfect every day, because, I don't know, perfect gets a little boring. So I hope that you found some interesting tricks or some ideas that you would like to try. I'm definitely going to try the kiwi and see if that helps with sleep and also up my hydration. But just know that, you know, take the wins when you get them and recognize where you're already doing a great job. So Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and can think of someone who would also find it interesting either in their career or just on the nutrition side, please share. I would love for, you know, some new ears to hear the podcast, and that is how I find a lot of good new podcasts or some episodes that expand my horizons. So I hope that you're doing well, taking care of yourself, and I will catch you next time on another episode of Defining Roles.